Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
He's unpredictable. He's relentless. He's fearless. He's smart. He's a jerk. Oh, man, what a jerk. How would you describe Kirk Minahan?
He's talented.
He's blunt.
He's complicated.
He's the fakest tough guy I know.
He's honest.
A self-proclaimed weenie.
He's angry.
He's actually a good guy.
He's a psycho big-mouth prick.
I wish we had more Kirk Minahans.
How would you describe Kirk Minahan?
Combustible.
Unpredictable.
Venomous.
Testy.
Obnoxious.
Selfish.
Polarizing.
Pompous.
Enough about me. Let's get to the show.
It's Kirk Minahan's Enough About Me.
I was supposed to talk to Mike Gorman. I think I went about a month ago. Went to the Garden to tape the podcast with Gorman. We taped it. It was excellent. Evidently, although I don't believe this, I fucked up with the equipment. I don't believe that. I think it was a sabotage by somebody, whether it's my producer or somebody at the company. I don't know. Everyone is trying to screw me. I understand that that's probably what happened. Gorman, as a gentleman, agreed unbelievably to spend more time with me. So we taped another podcast. This one was just as good, a little different, but just as good. I'm guessing it worked because you're listening to it. If not, we'll do it again in a month. I don't know. In my defense, Mike, it was recorded, but it was all muddled. You were there. You saw. I seemed to you very competent.
We saw lights, Kirk. We thought it was working.
You work with somebody who you thought was a very competent guy, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I don't know. Here's the problem. Is it went so well that I want to go over some of the same stuff, but I don't want to bore you by going over some of the same stuff. I'm in the trap here. So I'll just start this way, and we'll see. Where it goes is where it goes.
Okay.
So I saw last week, we both saw last week, that Sean McDonough, we both know, got the Monday Night Football job. He'll be great at it. I think I've told you this. I think you're the best play-by-play guy in the history of the city. I'd put McDonough at 1A. But I do wonder, for a guy like you, to see a guy like McDonough, who's sort of a peer, he's a little younger, go nationally, as he's been for a while, and get this big job. Do you ever step away and think, geez, you know, if I had done this or if I had done that, that could be me in this position for basketball, say?
First, let's talk about Sean here for just a second. I'm flattered that you would put me in the same class with Sean, because Sean is, I think, as good a guy as there is on the national level who can do every sport. Sean can do football well. He can do basketball well. He obviously can do baseball well. I've seen him do golf. I've seen him on some bizarre Olympic events occasionally, and he is just very, very solid. There aren't many guys that can do it, are as versatile as Sean is, so I'm really happy for him with the Monday Night Football thing. I think it's a great signing by ESPN. They put a really talented guy on there. That was obviously their emphasis in finding it somebody to replace Michael,
right,
who moved over to NBC. But so, on Sean, I couldn't be happier for Sean. I think it's a great, again, a great recognition of a guy who's very talented. As far as me being able to do that, I got no complaints with my career, Kirk. I've had a nice run. I've done the Olympics in Barcelona. I've done did team handball on the London Olympics. I'm going to do basketball out of Stamford, Connecticut on the upcoming Olympics.
You don't want to go to Rio? You don't want to fly down?
No, that's okay.
You sure? We can make that happen.
Yeah, don't please. I have no regrets that way. I really don't. I love what I did. As you know, I'm a Dorchester guy. Mm-hmm. To be doing the Celtics you know, the Boston Globe gave out awards last year for the first time, something called the Globies.
Yeah, I was not nominated.
And I was fortunate enough to win the Voice of Boston Globie. And, without sounding corny, I can't think of anything else that if my mom and dad were around today that I would want to show them. That somebody thought I was actually the voice of Boston. So in order to get that, I had to make the career decisions that I made. And again, I have no regrets at all looking back. I've had a really nice run.
Was there any point that, you know, ABC, hell, they've all had them, CBS, NBC, ABC, ESPN, came to you or your agent and said, hey, maybe we want to work with this guy from a, you know, more of a national perspective?
Well, yeah, I have had those offers. Again, they didn't seem to fit at the time. I probably the first tickle I got in that was way back. Not to get into my life history, but I had recently gotten divorced and had full custody of my daughter, and she was only two at the time. And the New York Mets called me up one day. somebody from the Mets, I forget who it was, called me up one day and asked me if I'd be interested in coming to New York and doing Mets baseball. And that's where I really had to make some life decisions as to what I was pursuing here, and at the time being a single father. So I opted for the single father route, was flattered by the Mets' interest at the time, but again, have really no regrets, and again, have done the first couple of rounds of the NCAA for CBS, mm-hmm. Have done the Olympics for NBC, have done way back when did NBA playoff games for Turner. So, I mean, I've had my turn. I've had my at-bats, my share of at-bats, so I have no regrets.
Are you still enjoying, did you enjoy this Celtic season, say, as much as, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago? I know it depends if the team's good or if they suck, but did you enjoy this entertaining season as much as you would have if you were 20 years younger?
Yeah, there's two different phases to my Celtics career. There's the first 15 years or so where I just did the home games, and that was a very different experience. You know, I didn't get to know Larry and Dennis and Danny and those guys, because you get to know people when you're on the road. So
so that was Santos and stuff like that.
Exactly, Roger Twibel.
Right.
Tommy and Kuz used to do the away games. Tommy and Red did the away games, you know, for a while. So I had two different phases to my career. So this second phase where I travel with the team and have a chance to get close to guys and is much, much different, and I enjoy it much, much more. And this year's team was a really good team to get in touch with. They're a good bunch of guys. They're overachievers. They kind of took on the personality of their coach. A lot of good things happened with this team, and I think there's a lot of good things going forward with the Celtics right now. I'm not sure exactly when we're going to be airing this, but we're coming up on the lottery drawing.
Yeah,
we'll find out exactly where the Celtics get to make a pick here, and that will determine a lot as the team goes forward. But this is a team going forward from making the playoffs for the last 2 years, and if it wasn't for an NBA snafu, I know it sounds like I'm being the ultimate homer here, but if it wasn't for an NBA snafu with those rules where the Celtics win the season series against Miami, beat Miami on the final night of the season to have a better record than Miami, and still finish below Miami in terms of the playoffs, and end up having to go to Atlanta for the first round as opposed to having Miami come to Boston for the first round, this team would have a legitimate shot at still playing as we talk right now if they had, you know, gotten a second of those two scenarios. But, you know, that's the way that stuff happens, and you got to move on, and now we move on to the lottery and see what happens there.
Do you feel like you're more pro-team than you were 10 years ago as you get older? Do you feel like you're more comfortable, I don't know, admitting it or not? Or do you just feel that way now as a broadcaster?
Yeah, I always had hope.
I mean, you do get hit with that sometimes. Now, before, yeah.
No, I don't make any, you know. Again, I had a chance to do network games, and I understand, like, the years that I did Big Monday. That was a lot of fun because the approach I took to doing that was you just root for both sides.
Right.
You're just looking for a good game, and you're looking for good plays, and you're looking for both sides. But when it comes to the Celtics, I mean, I want the Celtics to win. I'm not as over the top, I don't think, or ever have been as over the top as Tommy is about that. So I that helps me pull back a little bit. But as you say, I don't consider homer a bad word. I'm comfortable with that definition. I mean, if you're doing, quote, local broadcast, which is, in other words, you're not doing the network, you're doing a local broadcast, and you're not being a homer, you're missing the boat. Because I mean, that's what people tune in for. They don't want to get somebody's impressions calling the game. That's the biggest complaint I hear. I go to sometimes the guys who come in. I'm jumping around here a bit. Forgive me, but
that's right.
I go sometimes to the guys who come in from other teams, and especially the guys who come in from ESPN. I have a great relationship with Mike Breen, but with some of the other guys, and I'll say, "Are you all set on us?" And they'll say, "Yes." And I want to go, "No, you're not." No, you're not. You don't have 10% of a clue as to what's going on here. But that's all it needs, really. You only need about 10% of a clue on the network.
If I played a broadcast with you, if you watched it, of a, let's say, a team from, I don't know, the ML Car tank year, mm-hmm. and it's a March game, and it's against mm-hmm. a Milwaukee team. Yeah. If you're watching that game, and I'm watching with you, will you recognize that you, I don't want to say don't care, but that you're not as into it as you are if I played you a tape of a game from 2008?
I think that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Sure. You know, and again, I really try hard not to lie to the people listening. You know, I mean, we try to make a proposition with people at the beginning of the night and saying, like, hey, we're asking you to spend the next 2.5 hours with us. And so I got to be honest with those people, number one. Number two, hopefully 2, 3, 4 times over those course of the 2.5 hours, I can make somebody laugh,
right,
who's watching, because you owe them that. Otherwise, it's like a dirge.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go back to what you mentioned, some of the bad teams in the 80s, that was hard to sell. That was really hard to sell. You know, the Celtics went through an extended period of time where they just weren't good and made a lot of bad decisions from a front office point of view. And it wasn't until we got this current ownership in there that situation reversed itself.
Did you ever get the feeling that you weren't going to be around? Has your job always been secure since you showed up here at day one?
Oh, no. I worked almost the first 20 years of doing this on one-year contracts.
Is that true?
Oh, yeah.
So that was Sports Channel, right?
Yeah.
And it was 1 year deal till when?
So
like the mid 2000s, like 2004 or 2005.
Probably late 90s. Yeah, right around 2000. Yeah, it was always 1 year contracts. No, you know, I was finally able to get some extensions and get 3 year contracts after that. But yeah, so I never felt all that secure in the job. Frankly, the first 15 years.
Does that affect your performance? It would affect. If I had a 1 year deal, I mean, listen, I'm gonna get fired anyway. But if I was working on a series of 1 year deals, and I know what I do is a little different than what you do, my head would be spinning all the time.
Well, yeah, I mean,
no.
Well, my head did spin at that time because I was never really sure. Again, one thing I learned in the 80s, you and I talked about this before, when the team is good, people consider the broadcast is good.
Right, right.
When the team is bad, the broadcasters suck. So, you know, we went through an extended period of time where the team was bad, and that was all the time that I was on a one-year contract. And whoever, you know, the people were at Sports Channel at the time, who Fox and the different incarnations with Ben, they're always trying to figure out a way to make it better. And even though you and I know that people don't tune into a game to listen to a specific broadcaster, they tune into a game to watch the game, some of the management people think, well, if we change the talent, the numbers will go up. Well, you know, that usually doesn't happen, but that's, you know, it's like the situation that Danny describes to me all the time when he's trying to deal with other general managers, that general managers are afraid to make deals. They'd rather fire the coach.
Right.
You know,
right.
And then they necessarily make a deal themselves where they're on the hook for it.
Right.
And that was the thing with the ownerships that the different ownerships go through. They were trying to figure out a way that they could do something to up the ante without necessarily having no control over the product, which they don't, because the television carrier cannot control whether the team's good or bad. They can only control what the game looks like and sounds like.
How many years do you have left in your deal now?
I think I have a year.
Is it ever in your mind, like, are you considering right now? We talked about this last time. Are you considering right now? Screw, you have a nice house. You can walk to the water. You know, you probably don't have a lot of. I'm guessing you're okay financially. Is there any part of you that says, you know, I don't want to get on a plane to go to Minnesota in January? Screw it. I'm done.
No, not yet.
Kurt. No.
I can see that happening at some point. You know, I really like working with Scal, which is that's been a shot in the arm, and that's in no way meant as anything negative towards Tommy, but it just makes going to work a little different on the road. And I think Brad can be very successful here. I mean, I think this team can contend in the next 3 to 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
My standard response when someone asks me how long I'm going to stick around, I want to be in one more duck boat parade. That'd be fun.
So it's different now when a shot in the arm, when you say it's different. I know you're not meaning as a slight of Tommy. You just mean it's a different voice, it's different energy, it's a different perspective?
All three of those, exactly right. You know, and especially the last one, perspective. You know, Tommy has a frame of reference that goes back 50 years. Scal's is much shorter. Scal, there are guys that we when we go to games and they come out and they're shooting around and we're on the court an hour and a half before the game. These are guys that Scal competed against. a very different relationship than, say, Tommy would have. A lot of young assistant coaches in the league are guys that Scal played with and competed against. So he has a much better feel for who the opposition is, simply because he's the guys that appears of his, whereas Tommy very naturally would go more towards when saying someone is, let's say, making comparisons.
Mm-hmm.
Tommy tends to compare people 20, 30 years ago. Scal compares people 2 years ago. Again, it's just a very different perspective to take to the game, and I find it enjoyable. And Scal is much more of a, never to question here Tommy's credentials. He's in the Basketball Hall of Fame as a coach and won 2 world championships. That's all you need to say in terms of coaching. But Scal, in today's world of the coaches who really micromanage teams, Scal is really into the X and O's, and he's very good with the X and O's. And I sit around and listen to him talk with coaches, and he holds his own in discussions. Again, I think that's something interesting that he brings to the table that is just different.
I think when I listen to him, and I agree with what you're saying, but I feel like Scal hasn't figured out the personality yet, that part of
it. No, he hasn't. I agree.
Is a color. He's trying, I think, a little too hard, and it's a little too much of the we. I don't want so much we when I'm watching the game.
Yeah, that's one of the things I have to try to learn now and adjust to, and that's fun. I like being challenged to try to make adjustments. Do I have to be more of a homo with Scal, less of a homo with Scal? Those are all things. I can't control Tommy. I gave up trying to control Tommy years ago. But I can't have some influence on Scal. So, I'm always constantly looking for feedback like you just gave me as to what people think of Scal early on in his
career. Afraid? Are you, when the guy, not afraid, but when the guy who's played in the NBA or coached, actually Scal's done both, played and coached in the NBA or Tommy, when they say something that you disagree with, you 100% disagree with, as a play-by-play guy, are you going to disagree with him, or are you just going to let the statement go on its own?
I'm probably going to let the statement go on its own and tell him later off the air that I disagree with him.
Because I heard in the end of one of the games in Atlanta, they were getting, one of the blowouts. They lost by whatever. The game they lost by like 40 points. Mm-hmm. And somebody did a couple of shots for the Celtics at the end of the game, and Scal said he thinks that's going to carry over to the next game. And I thought, well, what the hell is he talking about?
Yeah.
And I wonder, is a play, so you're just going to say, that's not my real estate. That's his real estate, and I'll talk about him off the air. So what's the discussion like off the air? If you have a,
what are you thinking when you make a statement like that?
And is he, he's open to criticism?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, well, some people.
Scal is really good that way, and he completely understands this is new ground for him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's always looking for feedback. He's always looking for constructive criticism. He's very, very open to that. Now, that's not to say that he will suddenly back off his opinion afterwards, but he's very open to the discussion of it. And that's one of the things that from the very get-go at Scal that has been his, from where I sit, his most appealing characteristic. It's his willingness to learn, and this, a lot of guys come into the analyst job right from the league or from coaching, and they think it's going to be easy, and they think that television is just easy. And as you know from being in the business, it's not easy.
Right.
So that kind of shocks them when they first get on there. Some don't react well to it. Scal has reacted very well to it, and again is very open to constructive criticism, and even from fans and from other broadcasters. I mean, I'm sure he'd love to hear what you think about his broadcasting.
Yeah, he's been a little cold to me the few times we've met, but that's okay. I can deal with it. Most people are. You know, what's interesting about this business to me is one of the things, especially about TV, is and I think we even talked about this last time. Is a guy like Peyton Manning who prepares really hard. We know there's a quarterback, but CBS or Fox or ESPN or the NFL Network would cut him a check for $5 or $6 million a year with no tape, sight unseen, no idea if he'll be critical players, no idea if he has a sense of humor, no idea whatsoever, and just put him in a position to broadcast a game, like the lead position, which if you think about it, no other business in the world is going to do that.
I agree with you 100%.
He might turn out to be the greatest broadcaster ever. He might turn out to be, Ray Lewis. You have no idea, but I'm sure coaches have talked to ESPN people have talked to him in production meetings, so they have some idea. But you have no. ESPN handed Ray Lewis a check because you know, he gave fiery speeches and danced around. It's just, it's sort of the definition of insanity, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's crazy, and it's why I lived in a world of one-year contracts for so long, you know.
Right. Yeah, they thought that they could just bring somebody else in or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, exactly right. I think, you know, I mean, I've just been doing this for so long now. I'm probably more firmly implanted, but I can understand back then why they were like that. Especially, you know, through the 80s, everything was really good until the late 80s. And then the team went south for 10 years. It was during those 10 years and probably the first 8 or 10 of those years. Again, I was on these one-year deals. So, you know, I never knew when a Sean McDonough or a whomever was going to suddenly show up in Comcast or Sports Channel or Fox or whatever we were at that particular moment one day and impress somebody and have them decide, like, oh, this is the guy we need doing the play-by-play.
When you were having these one-year deals, did Tommy have multi-year deals? Did you know?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. Tommy had multi-year deals.
And you were...
Which was good, because I always considered that kind of insurance for me, because Tommy was, you know, Tommy and I... You know, we've had a good thing going for a long, long time, and both of us realize it. And neither one of us was ever in any hurry to go necessarily work with anybody else. So even though I was working on one-year deals, I always knew Tommy was in my corner. And if, you know, if and when they consulted Tommy as to what they were going with, the direction they were going to go on the play-by-play side, Tommy was always like, well, we got Mike. We don't need to go any further than that.
Have you been comfortable? Did it take you for a while, or right away were you okay with the idea that you were sort of in the duo, in the partnership? I don't know how to define it, but he's sort of the big personality and just sort of the...
Oh, without question. Yeah, sure. I had no problem with that. I mean, you know, I have no problem with that. I mean, Tommy's credentials are just so overwhelming.
Oh, sure, I understand that. But when you watch the game, I mean, he's sort of the lunatic, and you're sort of the straight guy.
I'm the straight man.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. I had no problem with that. No problem with that at all.
Do you are you ready for whenever it happens, whether it's 2 years from now, 3 years from now, you'll be okay doing 82 games with Scalabrine or whomever it is and Tommy gone? I mean, that's going to be, I would think, even though it's slowly being adjusted, going to be a hell of an adjustment, I would think, no?
Major adjustment, yeah. You know, major adjustment. And this is only speaking because the simple fact that Tommy's 81 years
right.
old.
Right, yeah, right.
You know, yeah. When we finished that last game and lost to Atlanta, it was a very emotional moment for me at the end of the game. Not because we lost to Atlanta, but because I'm never sure what's going to happen again next year. I mean, when you get as old as Tommy and I are, things happen to people. Did I just do my last game with Tommy Heinsohn? I certainly hope not, but I can't keep that thought out of my mind when we're signing off at the last time.
So the season ended, how long, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, something like that, 2 weeks ago.
Have you talked to Tommy since the season ended?
Oh, yeah, two or three times.
Okay.
In fact, I was inducted into the Rhode Island Radio Hall of Fame the other night, and Tommy surprised me, showed up at the ceremony. God bless him.
So I don't know how often is your, what is your off-season interaction like in the summer? How often do you talk to him?
We talk every couple of weeks. We used to play a lot of golf together, and then Tommy stopped playing, became too much of an effort from him. So, you know, if I'm in Boston, we'll have dinner. If a couple of weeks go by and I haven't seen him, I'll just check in. You know, we'll talk after the numbers pop up, the balls pop up, and we find out where the Celtics are.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give him a call. We'll talk about what the Celtics should do. I'll see him in June on draft night.
We'll probably
be working together in between there. If I'm in Boston, which I'm in Boston more now because I have an apartment in Boston, which I never had before.
Yeah, you're not schlepping back and forth like a moron.
Exactly.
Like a total moron. One second. Like a total moron. Back and forth from the, you know, I like, you're one of the few people I like. I don't want to see you in danger driving three or four hours at night in the winter back and forth to New York and Boston.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. The thing is, I'm standing here right now and I'm looking out the window of my house and we live on the end of a lake and my view is for about a mile down a house and in winter and summertime rather when all the trees are full you cannot see any other homes on the lake just feel like so I mean I love where I live not so much I hate the distance it is from Boston, but once I get here and I look out and I see my dock and I see my kayaks and I don't see anybody else and I just see a lake, it's my backyard. I'm kind of like, okay, I understand why I did that for so long.
Yeah, but you could just stay at the hotel, Mike, and get up the next morning at 5:30 and drive and be there at 9:30 the next day. I'm worried about you, that's all.
That's true. Well, thanks. I appreciate that. The thing is, and Kirk, you know this from doing shows. Whether it be a game or whether it be what you
do in some
the mornings
adrenaline,
all the
yeah.
time, there's adrenaline flowing
that's
after
true.
The game.
That's
for
true.
You, it's at like 10 o'clock in the morning, so it just makes for a better day. For me, the adrenaline was flowing at 10, 11 o'clock at night, so it was – I always used to tell people it was the last 45 minutes of the drive that were the problem. The first 2 hours, I was winding down from the game. I've got there's a wonderful guy, and you would probably, hopefully you know him. His name is George Weiner. He's a character actor.
From Fletch?
From Fletch, exactly right.
Oh, yeah. My God. From She's the okay. Sheriff? I know him very well. I mean, I don't know him. I know. Yeah.
Let me tell you what you don't know about George. George grew up in what is now, it's not the Ritz-Carlton, the hotel that's right on the corner of the Common. The Four Seasons is on one corner, and it's not a Mandarin.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, yeah,
okay.
yeah.
That hotel, his dad was the general manager of that hotel.
Really?
They lived on the top floor, and his dad put a basketball court in on the top floor. And called Red Auerbach to teach his sons how to play basketball.
Oh, jeez.
And Red did it. Red would come over and hold these little mini sessions with George and his brothers. So George is a just a wonderful Celtic fan, has been forever, watches every single game.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And so George and I became, go back about 20 years, at the Final Four, I used to play pickup basketball with Kevin Costner and a whole bunch of people that he hung out with and came to the Final Fours with, and I had met because when I was doing Big Monday and me and Raph were guys tended to get introduced to people like this.
Yeah.
Anyway, I would play basketball. George is one of the guys I played basketball with. So Kevin and I still are occasionally in touch, but George and I are in touch all the time. We've become really good friends. And so he being in L.A.,
yeah, 3 hours earlier, right.
Yeah, so I would call him on the car phone when I hit the Mass Pike and sometimes talk to him all the way home, sometimes for like a couple of hours. He'd just stay on the phone and talk about the Celtics because he just loves them so much.
That
got me through a lot of rides.
Guys like that are fascinating to me. They've sort of made a career. It's got to be such a strange career being a character actor. You know, you have no idea where your next check is, and you probably... You're never going to get that big, big role, but he's been steadily working, right, for 30, 35 years.
Oh, he has a wonderful resume. If you ever go on there, I forget what that website
is. IMDb, right.
Yes, exactly.
He's in Spaceballs.
Yeah. Oh, Spaceballs.
Right.
He was the district attorney in Hill Street Blues.
Oh, right. That's right.
Going way back. No, George has had a really remarkable career, but I mean, I'd give you his number sometime.
Yeah, you got it.
If you ever want to get somebody on to talk about the Celtics, he will talk about the Celtics forever, and he is right on top of how many turnovers this guy committed in the last game. I mean, he lives it. He really lives it.
So, long
answer to your question, he bailed me out on a lot of rides.
There you go. So, often our job with the three of us, you know, one of us isn't talking to the other one off the air, or two of us aren't talking to one right now. Actually, we're in the middle of one right now for about a month. In the, whatever, more than 30 years that you and Tommy have been together, what's the longest you've gone off the air without talking to each other?
Oh, a couple of months.
Couple of months?
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah. Well, again, it's more recently than before.
Oh, I meant like a fight,
a fight.
Yeah, contentious
no.
thing.
No, nothing? maybe like 3-4 days.
Yeah.
Tommy has this line he uses all the time. He says, "Mike and I have had only one fight over our entire career together, and it's still going on." I know there's no reason to fight Kirk. I mean, I don't want to be who Tommy is. I don't want to do what Tommy does on the air. He really doesn't want to do what I do. We both have our own turfs. We're very comfortable with our own turfs. Occasionally we get in political discussions that get kind of hot and heavy. We don't come from the same spots there. But in terms of basketball, I mean, again, I'm really not going to ever publicly and very rarely privately second guess a guy who's in the Hall of Fame with seven. He's got like a 7 or 8 championships, whatever it is, behind him, and 2 as a coach. I'm not about to second guess him.
No, I understand that, but human nature. You work with a guy, you travel with a guy for years and years and years.
Oh, yeah.
There's got to be. There has to be some of that.
There is some of that, but again, I remember one time we had this terrible disagreement in Orlando. I forget what it was over, and we had it over breakfast, and to the point that I actually got up and just left the table. I just said I can't deal with this, and I left the table. I can remember the producer Paul Lucy calling me in the afternoon and saying, "Have you and Tommy?" Because he was at the breakfast with us. "Have you and Tommy resolved the situation from this morning?" And I said, "No." He said, "Well, you got to resolve it before we go on the game." I said, "Well, okay. Well, I'll let you know before the game whether we did or we didn't." And I can remember walking out to the bus and Tommy standing outside the bus, and I was fully prepared to just walk right by him and get on the bus, and this huge arm just came around my shoulder and he just pulls me back and gives me this big hug and says, "You know, we can't have this. We can't have something like this between you and me." And I'm just like, "Okay, fine." And that was the end of it.
How tough is it to broadcast a game? You're doing the play-by-play, and you're trying to do your stuff, get all your stuff in. When the guy next to you, and this happens obviously with Tommy, we know. No, this, I actually don't even think quite as much as it even was like 10 years ago. But when he becomes totally hyper-focused on the referees to the point where it's actually interfering with the broadcast itself, how do you make that work?
Mostly non-verbally with looks. I mean, again, we've just been around each other long enough. Right. We know what looks are all about. You know, Paul Lucy, again, who's just the best producer I've ever worked with, will very quietly say something in the headphones that he'll just go, "Easy, guys, easy," something like that. And that's directed more at Tommy than necessarily at me. I just try to put distance between myself and what he's saying, number one, and number two, I never try to encourage him along those lines, unless I think that the referees have made a ridiculous call. My favorite part, though, and I'm sure, Kirk, you've done this a million times, my favorite part is where a San Antonio player drives the lane and gets whacked by, like, a Celtic player, and Tommy goes, like, "Where's the foul?" And then Paul will say in his head, "We'll run that
the replay,
you."
Right?
And you run it, and you see the guy get whacked in the head, and Tommy goes, "Where's the foul?" Then you go like, "Okay, well, I'm not going there because he doesn't even want to deal with the reality of what he just saw."
I was going to say, there are times where they show the replay, and it's clearly a foul, and you can almost hear the relief in your voice because you know at least you're going to be able to move on from, you know, a totally insane rant again.
Exactly.
Which is still with Tommy, though. You get 2 or 3 a year that are legitimately entertaining. When did you first realize that you were working with a guy that was going to, you know, be so focused on the refs? Right away?
Right away, yeah.
Well, how the hell did he do national games for CBS?
They kept him in a pretty tight rein, number one. He worked with Dick Stockton, who's not a guy who gives you a lot of room anyway. Tommy used to tell me stories about with CBS. He had to show up at the production meeting with 1 or 2 anecdotes about every player on the team, and turn that list over to the producer of the games on CBS. And then, the guy would come in the headsets and go, "All right, Tommy, do the Gorman piece right now." And Tommy hated it, but I had a good gig with the network, so he wasn't going to knock it. But they kept him on a very tight rein, and he didn't. Again, it was more that thing that I mentioned to you earlier when I was doing the Big East games, Big Monday games. I would root for both sides. Tommy on the national games, if you listen to him, thought the officials were bad to both teams.
Right.
It wasn't the us against them. It is when he's doing a Celtic broadcast. It was more. You know, he just has a thing about officials. He just really does.
Yeah, it's fun. Once in a while, because I grew up and I was obsessed with Bird, like you wouldn't believe. I was one of these kids who, you know, if you'd go watch a youth basketball game in my town when I was in 7th or 8th grade, every kid tried to take like 18-foot shots with their left hands. Every kid would dive for a loose ball. They'd wipe their sneakers. They'd do all this, you know, do all the same stuff that Bird did. So I was obsessed with him. So once in a while, I'll still go on YouTube and watch old games. And, you know, a lot of times you're calling them. You and Tommy are calling the games. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's amazing to me is how, and this is, you know, full broadcast, is how little of the junk that you have to deal with now as a play-by-play guy that existed back then. Just the Twitter stuff and the reads and the promos and then this and then that. I would guess that you probably do five times as much of that during a game now as you did 30 years ago. Is that a fair estimate? More, maybe?
Fair estimate. Five times as much, yep. And, you know, the thing for me is because of all those reads that I have to do, and because of the fact that I have an outstanding color guy and have had outstanding, stats guy for the whole time I've been working in Boston, who's Dick Leip from Bentley, who's just as good as anybody in the business at what he does. Between the cards I had to read and the stats that Dick would constantly be firing at me during a game, it's like 95% of what I say on the air is kind of pre-scripted. There's not a lot of room for me to, I'm not talking about saying how many fouls there are on that guy, how many points that guy has, but when I get through the reads, when I get through the stats, when I get through what I consider are the nuts and bolts of play-by-play, there's not a lot of room left to come out with opinions or to second-guess, you know, my color guy. So, I never have the time to do
right.
It, I guess, is the best way to answer the question.
Is there a call, when you're done, and is there one call that stands out that you made in your mind, one that stands out above anything else?
A moment, you mean?
Yeah, just a moment. Yeah, a moment that you had, a call within the game that you got to have, sort of that moment, the one call that you said, all right, this is probably the best one. When it's all said and done, it's the one I feel best about.
Well, thanks to the wonderful editing by a guy named Jeff Grice, who does a lot of the editing in Boston, mm-hmm. that famous inbounds pass by Isaiah
right.
that the Bird stole and gave to DJ, and mm-hmm. DJ hit the basket, I thought there was a foul on the play. So after DJ made the basket, I said, and a foul.
Oh, you thought DJ got fouled?
Yeah, right. I did, and he didn't. So for years, they always used the network call or other calls because my call was wrong. And
I think it was Bob Neal on TBS, I want to say.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. I could be wrong, but yeah. Craig Neal, whatever his name is, yeah.
Bob Neal. So Jeff, as a favor to me one day, did a really great job of audio mixing and took my and the foul completely out of the play. And you'd never know there was an edit made. So now all of a sudden it's a really good call.
Do you miss you miss the old garden?
Oh, I miss the old garden terribly because of the broadcast position. Remember that little overhang? We used to call it the overhang.
Mike, your seats were right. Where you sat was right above where my dad and I sat for the season tickets that we had as a kid.
Oh, really?
I was right below you guys. It was the greatest seat of. I mean, I could never see. I had to duck and to see both scoreboards, but it was the greatest from a visual perspective. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, no, it was. And the thing that was great about it, that from the courtside position we have now, that you don't get, is you could see things develop. I watch calls occasionally or listen to games occasionally from back then, and I was able to anticipate.
Right, you're too low now, right? Yeah.
Pardon me?
You're almost
too low. You can't see it. You're looking through people.
Right.
I could see the whole court. In my span of vision, I could see all 10 players at once. So I could see things develop and see things happening that you can't see now from courtside. And now when you're not at courtside, you're so far up, you do most of the game off the monitor anyway. You don't even bother looking at the court.
And those are great teams to have that view from way they move the ball, the way they the ball movement, the way they move without the ball. Yeah. To watch that team from that view is unbelievable. That's a lifetime.
I distinctly remember I would call a fast break by calling the guys who are on the wing.
On the wing, yeah.
You know, and then Bird would inevitably find them, and that was an expression I used with Bird a lot. Finds them. Because that's what he was so good at finding who the right guy was.
It's so different, and Brady's great, and Ortiz has been great, but maybe it's because I was so young and so influenced by it, but in my life, and I wasn't really around for Orr, I've never seen somebody capture a city like Bird did. When Bird played a home game on a Wednesday night, it was just event night in the city for, 7 or 8 years, I would say.
Yeah, without question. It was the place to be in the city of Boston. And it is becoming the place to be again, which is nice. I am old enough to remember. That's the only guy in my lifetime that I would say rivaled Larry was Bobby Orr. But when the Bruins played Bobby, and Bobby was at his peak, that was must-see television. He was just so good.
Do you still get feedback? Who is giving you feedback at this point in your career with what you've done? Do you get feedback from management at Comcast or somebody at Comcast? And there's a part of you that wants to strangle if some 36-year-old guy tells you how to call a basketball game. I mean, you know.
I would want to strangle some people if they get into that area. But no, Bill Bridgen is the current boss at Comcast, and he is very much.
I know him, yeah.
Yeah, he's just very much you do what you do, and you just go do it.
Has that always been the case or no?
There were some guys back early on I'm trying to think of, I forget their name, some guys who were back in the Sports Channel day who were either executive producers or were GMs would think that they had good advice that way as to how I should do something. But I'd usually just listen and then not do it.
What is your, if you have a basic core philosophy, I mean, you know, you're a thoughtful guy. I'm sure you have some idea of what it is. Is it simplicity? Is it
less is better? I think it's always been a theory. Guys that were my heroes were not heroes. That's the wrong word. Guys who I looked up to in the business, who I thought did it right, were guys like Pat Summerall.
Yeah.
You know, again, just came from the less is better school. You know, it is TV. I mean, I had experience in radio and, you know, and in radio, you got to hold, it's a whole different animal. You've got to create the scene. You've got to try to have a constant updated mental picture in someone's mind of what's going on in the court. And when you're doing television, it's a visual medium. They can see what's going on in the court. So your job is to, as I see it, is to enhance, more so than describe, because radio is all about description. TV is all about enhancement. So that would be more where I would come from in terms of a philosophy. I think less is better. I think it's important. I tell Scal all the time, I said, treat the broadcast as if it's a three-man booth and you have to leave room for this other guy who never talks.
Right.
And so you hear sneaker squeaks. You get some feel for the building as opposed to, especially now when you get into the a lot of the ESPN guys and Turner guys. I mean, they just never shut up.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
They
seems
never
like,
stop
right,
talking.
Right. It seems generationally. Is it social media? Is it the desire to get viral? I mean, I'll flip around.
That's a big deal.
Yeah right. Yeah. I have the NBA pad. If I'm flipping around, I'll hear a play-by-play guy or a color guy just screaming about nothing in the middle of a game. And I'm thinking, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah. No, there are a lot of guys. And I'll tell you a guy, and I'm not trying to single him out. I think he's very, very good at what he does. Very good at what he does. But I don't feel like I'm doing the same job as Kevin Harlan.
Right. He feels like he's sort of a character in the game.
Yeah. Yes. Yep.
Gus Johnson.
Yep. A little bit. Yep.
I mean, there's some of that, and that's their style, and I guess it's worked well for them. But
it's worked very well for them. And you know, again, none of these people on the network levels are making these hires solely based on their own judgment. They have focus groups. They have this. They have that. That's it. They can tell you this is what people want to hear. I don't think people necessarily want to hear the play-by-play guy going crazy in the first 5 minutes of the game.
No, they don't.
You know, I don't think they do, but obviously some others do. And you know, guys have made nice careers out of being that way.
I don't know Abby Chin that well. I've seen her a few times at Comcast before they banned me from the entire city of Burlington. But
yeah. They want you back, though, Kurt.
They really don't.
We need to talk about that off podcast.
I'd rather talk about it on the podcast. But you're a powerful guy.
I know, but I would not.
I need an advocate. But I wonder more and more as we go on and on. It does feel to me like the sideline reporter is being slowly replaced by Twitter. Though I will say this. And this is not a knock on Abby, who I think does a good job at what the job is in 2016. I thought having a guy like Scalabrine as the sideline reporter, say at home during the playoffs, when he's sitting there and you're getting an actual coach or player perspective come out of a timeout, I thought was a really good addition, if that makes sense.
I did too. Yep. I did too.
And
Abby's really good at what she does, and I think it's only going to get better as time goes on. But it's again... it's much easier for Scal to listen into a huddle and to quickly synopsize what the meat of that was and get it out than it is for Abby or it would be for me. Because he has that experience as a player and as a coach, he was a great addition in that. Sideline, I don't know where sideline that whole job is going. To
neither
be
do I.
You know, it's a little bit of interview celebrities. It's a little bit of get some favors done for the sales department to interview people that they want. I tell Abby all the time, and have told Greg, if you know. I don't like to use the word told, but I would say, look, for what it's worth, from where I sit, the best thing you bring to the broadcast is your ability to go into those timeouts and come out of those timeouts and say, here's what coach is saying that we need to do. Here's what the subject of the timeout was. That's the access that you and I as a TV listener can't get that the sideline reporter can bring us. An interview with Donnie Wahlberg, I don't really care.
I mean, just shoot me. Nothing against him.
Against Donnie, I think Dickerson.
I think Dickerson was great at his job. But you're right. When they go, hey, let's go meet up with this, you know, young singer who's got. You're just like, well, and I understand. There's a reason why they do it. But you know, I wonder out of 100 fans, how many want to see that? Two, three tops.
I don't know any who do. Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah. I really don't know any do. It's a turnoff, and I think it is for me, from where I sit, if I see that coming and there's some other game going on somewhere that I'm like half interested in and I'm watching at home, boom, I'm gone.
All right, I'll get you out of here we'll be doing this again in 3 weeks because I'm sure this will be screwed up as well. But so just to recap real quickly, you are electing not to go down to Rio. Is that correct? Were you offered the chance, or are you just going to Stanford instead?
No, they Marv is doing the games. They're only going to have one.
So what are you doing at Stanford?
Game. Yeah, I'll do men's and women's basketball 2 games a day.
So it's sort of you'll be doing like the non-USA games. Is that going to be it?
No, I don't know if this is true or not. Is what the grapevine has said is that both Marv and Doug Collins in their negotiations of their contract have only agreed to do USA men's games.
That's what I mean, right? So you'll be doing the games that aren't USA games.
I'll be doing USA women's.
Women's. Oh, women's. Okay. With who?
Again, there are a lot of men's games. I mean, like when Spain plays Argentina again, I mean, that's a great game.
Sure.
Those games will all be done out of Stanford.
I mean, no athletes will be there, but yeah, I mean, they'll be.
Well, what do you think? You think that's going to really happen?
I don't know.
How big a protest do you think this ultimately will be?
Not that big. I think everybody's going to wind up showing up. It does seem really strange that they, you know, all these places bid like crazy for it, and they just hand it over to a city when this is looming. It happens in the World Cup too. You wonder sometimes. I guess is it just a money grab?
That's a big money grab.
No, I know, but
FIFA would be evidence.
But I know, but I mean, there's 50 cities that are willing to fork over the dough, right? Did you want the Olympics in Boston?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because you live in New York. That's why.
No, I tell you what. Here's where
you don't want to. Come on, you know you from Dorchester.
I think if we had the Olympics had come to Boston, we would have got our whole mass transit system.
Oh, you're a dreamer. You are a dreamer.
I am. Well, okay. I do think. I think that was a real possibility.
You think so?
Yeah, and I think now the way they can erect these stadiums and take them down. It's not like you have the old days that you have these eyesores that exist for years. You go back to Barcelona, most of the sites in Barcelona in 92 are gone. And now they put up these temples. You don't have to build a velodrome in Boston and then live with it. You can build it and take it down after it's over and move on to something else.
You know what's crazy is we were here. We did a bunch of shows on it. When I say nobody wanted it, they did a terrible job of selling it.
Yes, they did.
And nobody, you know, people.
I think they'll be the first to admit that.
And people are cynical here by nature. I mean, we both grew up here. My initial reaction was this will be the biggest money grab from politicians you've ever seen in your life that's going to lead to graft and disaster.
Well, I could
be wrong.
I don't think you were wrong. I think there would be a degree of that. Again, my whole thing was that I just think, you know, the MTA needs to be.
Oh, gee, you think? Oh my God!
Yeah. Okay. So,
if we get
somebody else to do it for under the guise of we have to do it for the Olympics, that would have been a plus for the city of Boston.
All right. So you've had to waste 2 hours of your life with me, which you'll never get back. When you're on your deathbed many years from now, you're not going to be thinking, I wish I did another podcast with Kirk Minahan.
So we'll do this again.
You're welcome here anytime. You know that. But I appreciate you going through the dress. You're a fan of Broadway. We tried out we basically did a show in Hartford the first time. We tried it out. And now we brought it here again. Again, no one's going to hear this one either. So we're just pretending. And then we'll do it again, I'm sure.
No, I thoroughly enjoy the conversation.
Of course, anytime. Mike, thank you very much.
All right, Kirk. Have a good one.
You too. Thanks for listening to Enough About Me with Kirk Minahan. If you want more great podcasts, it's pretty easy. You can go to the WEEI mobile app. You can go to Stitcher. You can go to iTunes. You can look up Enough About Me with Kirk Minahan. You can find the ones with Sean McDonough, Bob Ryan, Dan Shaughnessy, David Portnoy. There'll be more. And what you can do when you like them, you write a review. That'll help us out a lot. You give us a rating. We can help you. You can help us. Get that done. Do it right now.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.